Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by C.W.B. and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 23. Cuckoo. Horrible. Summary. Huddy versus Moringa. Round 1. Moringa's complaint is summarily postponed for the very reasons Lestrade explained. She and Mycroft cannot participate in the proceedings, therefore they do not have a quorum. Sherlock can tell that Moringa is angry but resigned. She will not fight something she cannot change, but she will wait and try again when the senior council reunites with Seeger after the migration back to Pobeda. The summer is coming to an end, but there is still much work to do. The junior council has been informed that they will stay in training on the iceberg until the new moon, at which time they can expect the first of the colony to reach Cassiopeia on their way home. The junior and senior councils will join that pod and begin the long journey back. According to Sherlock's calculations, they have 8 more days, 9 nights until then. John and Sherlock are careful not to draw what they have termed the not-so-good type of attention. They are very clear with each other about what the not-so-good type of attention entails. First, doing anything in public that could be misconstrued as adultish meaning sexual. Second, doing anything that anyone could justifiably discipline them for. Third, any attention whatsoever from Moringa. After one day of their new behavioral plan, Sherlock comes to the conclusion that the entire thing is stupid. John consoles him with a quick hug and a bill rub, then moves away to something else they have discussed and agreed upon, a respectable distance. The sun has only crossed a small fraction of the sky before Sherlock comes to the conclusion that this, too, is stupid. Each night, Sherlock looks forward to the evening crash with a longing exponentially related to the length of their blasted respectable distance. Dinner is barely finished, grooming hardly begun, when Sherlock starts jostling John to the wind-protected huddling spot. "I'm not done eating," John complains the first time it happens. Sherlock sighs and sulks and taps his foot until John glares and spits a fishbone at him. "It's the middle of the day, Sherlock," John whines the second time it happens. "Sherlock, no one is at the crèche yet, not even Huddy. It would just be the two of us standing by ourselves, looking like penguins," John says the third time. Sherlock's slow unraveling is only halted by the fact that eventually they must go to sleep, and if they must go to sleep, they must huddle, and if they must huddle, he must attach himself to John the way a barnacle attaches to a whale, with no intention of ever letting go. If John is annoyed at him during the day, and Sherlock deduces that he is, he sheds that annoyance the moment they're tucked up together, belly to belly, bill to bill, under the constellations. Then, with their wings wrapped around each other, with no need for respectable distances, they can murmur mythology and whisper words of adoration until John snuggles up under Sherlock's wing and falls asleep. And even then, Sherlock soaks up John's little snores, his sleep mumbling, his shifting about on Sherlock's toes, and stores them up for the next day when he will have to work hard to deflect the not-so-good type of attention. They have not been back to their ice cave since Moringa's surprise visit. There's little opportunity for free time, and when they have it, they cannot justify the potential risk. Even if, John tells Sherlock, they stand on opposite sides of the cave and take a nap, Moringa would be able to spin a tale of the two of them sneaking away, unchaperoned, to be adultish. "Then let's bring a chaperone, John. Let's bring Huddy, and we can stand on opposite sides of the cave and take a nap if we have to. But let's not allow that bitter old bag of feathers to completely curtail our actions." John considers and can find no reason to disagree. For the first time since the entire debacle began, John seems truly happy. His whole face lights up when he tells Sherlock that this would be the perfect opportunity to check on their treasures. You're right, Sherlock. We never did anything wrong in the first place. This whole thing is ninnikara. It's beyond ridiculous, John. It's cuckoo. Completely cuckoo. Let's go ask Huddy.
Huddy listens as they explain that they would like to check on their treasures before the migration home, and happily nods her head when they ask her to chaperone them.
Of course, it would be my pleasure, and the exercise would do my hips some good, too. I haven't hiked up there in more winters than I can count.
You've been to the ice cave before?
Sherlock has a hard time imagining this, but Huddy winks at him and says,
You're not the first two young pangs to drive each other to destruction, you know.
They agree to meet right after lunch at the path that leads to the cave, and Huddy hustles away to tell the other senior pangs about the change in her afternoon plans.
Sherlock puffs up like a blowfish, full of pride at their success, and John sneaks him a quick peck on the bill.
After lunch, John and Sherlock wait at the foot of the path, chirping in excitement about the opportunity to revisit the cave one last time. John has spent what little free time he's had between the morning meeting and a session with Cetus scouring the shoreline and flat plains of the Berg for new treasure. Under his wing, he's tucked a dark gray feather in excellent condition. Sherlock inspects it, careful not to separate the still-adhered barbs, and declares that it is from a lightly mantled sooty albatross. John is just putting the specimen back in place when Huddy toboggans over, skidding to a halt at their feet.
Ready?
She has a long strand of something red and leafy draped over her neck, and both Sherlock and John stare at her as if she's grown a narwhal horn.
What's wrong? She asks, looking back and forth between them. Oh, this! I think you'll like this idea, my friends. If you lay this over your treasure while the seaweed is still wet, it will freeze to the ice and sear your bits and pieces until next summer.
Sherlock nods appreciatively, and John reaches out to poke at one of the leaves.
I should have thought of that myself, Sherlock exclaims, leaning forward to get a closer look. Is it Palmaria decipiens? I've heard of it, but I've never seen it before. It is! Erebus knew just where I could find some. See how thin it is? It will freeze in place, but you'll be able to tear it easily from the ice next summer. If you need to loosen anything from it, you can just rinse it in sea water.
Sherlock thinks Huddy is marvelous, so he tells her so.
I think you're marvelous. Thank you so much for doing this for us.
Huddy laughs and waves them on.
You're rather marvelous yourself, Sherlock. Let's start, shall we?
The trek up the iceberg takes a little longer than usual with Huddy in tow, but John and Sherlock are happy to slow down their pace in order to accommodate her. Along the way, they chat about the upcoming migration home and what they're most looking forward to. Huddy is looking forward to seeing her friends, from whom she's been separated most of the summer. John is looking forward to learning more about the healing practices from Cetus. Sherlock is looking forward to not being the center of so much not-so-good attention and being more openly affectionate with John, hidden in plain sight among the masses. They stop talking as they approach the entrance to the cave, each of them out of breath, each silently anticipating their time here. John enters first, then Sherlock, then Huddy. Huddy is only 1 foot inside the cave when John shrieks. The call is one of outrage and warning. Sherlock doesn't make a peep. He is too shocked to open his bill. Everything is gone. Every single feather, every tiny artifact, bone and shell, the seal tooth, it's all gone.
She took it! She took everything!
John yells, wings flapping, feathers fluffing.
I can't believe it! Why would she do that? It was ours, our treasure. He couldn't have meant anything to her.
Sherlock wants to step forward and soothe John, but is afraid of getting knocked in the head with an errant wing. His own rage simmers inside, but he tamps it down for now, not wanting to add to John's spectacular display. His is enough for both of them. Huddy goes to the ice window and looks down on the iceberg below them. She considers the sea, the horizon and the sky, then turns back to her two charges.
The treasure means nothing to her, my little Pangs. Hurting you means much, much more. I am so very sorry that this has happened. My heart breaks that any emperor among us would set such a poor example, but especially one that sits on the council.
John is crying now, fat tears rolling down his sleek cheeks, slipping over his smooth white chest and freezing to the ice at his feet. Sherlock moves in and pulls John's head down to his shoulder and holds him close, then warbles a soft call of comfort, just like the ones Olive made to him when he was a hatchling.
I'll kill her. I swear to Poseidon, I'll kill her.
Shh, John, shh. Huddy turns back to the window. The others are assembled for the last group assembly before dinner when they arrive back to the council grounds. The other junior Pangs greet them with enthusiasm and ask about their pahi. Huddy rushes to answer first, as John looks like a tiny feather-encrusted volcano about to explode.
Our expedition was quite exhilarating. We discovered all sorts of interesting new things.
Sherlock watches the senior Pangs for their reactions. Erebus and Cetus smile and nod. Vela and Pavo make small bows of recognition. Mycroft doesn't react at all, unless perhaps his usual frown is slightly different in some way that Sherlock cannot detect. Moringa looks away, feigning indifference. The junior Pangs gather for the evening, having been sent to huddle by Erebus instead of Huddy.
"She'll be along shortly, young ones, do not fear. She is presently attending to a different matter, but should be done momentarily."
Sherlock's undercoat bristles with suspicion. Where is Huddy? As soon as Erebus has left them in their huddle, Sherlock whispers to John that he will be right back, and he slips off. 20 steps away, he hears something behind him and leaps into a spinning twist, ready to catch his attacker.
"You pink it, it's me, as if I'm going to let you go off sneaking on your own." "Ah, John, fine, let's go." "Where are we going?" "To find out what Huddy is up to. Be quiet."
The two of them sneak away in the opposite direction of the council grounds and creche. They slip to their bellies and slide as stealthily as they can, staying close to the base of the berg and off the broader, more visible plains. They are about to round the curve that would lead them to the path that leads to the cave when the wind carries a hiss of conversation to their ears. Sherlock drags his feet to stop himself, and John plants his face into Sherlock's tail feathers.
"This is not the time or place, John. It was an accident."
The voices get louder as they sneak closer. Backs to the berg, they halt just before the curve of the ice would give them away. Sherlock cups his wingtips to his oral patches and leans in as far as he dares. The wind cooperates only every few words.
"Absolutely intolerable. Do such a thing. Harmless Pangs. Little hearts. The satisfaction of... makes me wonder. You really are on earth."
"Huddy," Sherlock whispers over his shoulder to John.
"Silly. Could not care less. Stupid feathers. That you accuse, told you, put up with this, on which side, over?"
"Moringa?" John asks. Sherlock nods in affirmation.
"Had I known, what did it feather bring you back, seriously need, whether or not, right decision, said and done, let it go, send you back. Do not tell me. Ruined my family. Stand by. All over again."
Sherlock has heard enough. He knows that what they are doing, spying on two adults, would unequivocally result in some serious not-so-good attention. They slip back to the creche, and when Huddy returns, Sherlock is pretending to be asleep And John really is. Notes. Maori translations. Ninikara. Be foolish, nonsensical, illogical, ridiculous, ludicrous. Cuckoo. Fearful, dreadful, awful, horrible.